Warning: the following podcast, which contains strong language and mature content, is unsuitable for children or for the faint of heart. The subject matter discussed will be frightening and graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
When you want to hear about the paranormal, you get the Spooked Girls. True crime that makes you hypothermal with the three Spooked Girls. Stabby snippets will give you dreams. Tara and Jessica will make you. Along with the Spooked Girls. Bring on the slaughter. We on that haunted ground. Spooked Girls. The three Spooked Girls.
Hey there, Spooksters, and welcome back to another episode here on Three Spooked Girls. My name is Jessica, and as always, I'm joined by my favorite ghoul friend, Tara.
Hey, Spooksters.
Today, we're going to do something that we used to do on Thursdays, but we're doing it on a Monday this time. We are doing another Papa Joe case. If you don't know, I am obsessed with the show. It's on Discovery. It's Homicide Hunter. It's the American detective with one Joe Kenna.
Buy our Papa Joe merch.
Yeah, I made a wonderful Papa Joe. But before we do that, we got to do our normal Monday business. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so by following us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Threads. Our handle is @3SpookedGirls. If you want to interact with us or other spooksters, our Facebook group is 3SpookedGirls Official. It's actually really fun in there. Like, we talk about it a lot in here, and it's because we really do really love the Facebook group.
Oh, yeah.
I know that, like, Facebook is, like, meh, you know, not everyone uses it. But honestly, nowadays, all I use Facebook for is groups.
I was going to say, like, everybody I know that still has their Facebook, like, that's literally the only reason they have it is because of groups.
Groups are so fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
And be part of our group because it's also, like, where we do, like, gift exchanges, book club, all the shenanigans.
It's my birthday week. If you're not in there, go get in there. If you're not subscribed to our YouTube, go subscribe to our YouTube. We don't acknowledge. Okay, so we recorded Thursday's episode first. We didn't acknowledge that that was my birthday, but Thursday's my birthday, so.
We didn't at all. There will not be, like, a happy birthday, Tara. And I don't. Yeah, no. You know what it was? I was, like, thinking about it, and then you started talking about the cases that we were discussing, and then I was, like, so enthralled. I was like, no, I forgot to scream it.
I'm too distracted. Yeah,
it's my bad.
It's okay.
That's my ADHD for you.
I don't. Yeah, it's fine. I'm gonna be the age Lorelai was in season two.
Yes.
Season two. Wow. I'm growing up. Look at me.
So anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah, we also have a YouTube channel. If you didn't know this, it's Three Spooked Girls. Definitely check it out. This episode will not be on there. We talk about it in the Thursday episode for a minute. I look like a potato right now because I'm doing, like, oil. I'm oiling my hair.
Oh, I upload the audio episodes. They're just audio. I could do it in Headliner.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I do it in Headliner. Oh my God, I forgot to mention this. I was going to fucking say a smart ass comment. In the Thursday episode's True Crime Headline, guys. Spoilers. Because OJ died.
OJ died.
Over the next, like, however many weeks, I'm putting up our series that we did on YouTube, like, every Friday.
Yeah.
So if you guys are subscribed and you're seeing more uploads, that's why. Just because, like, that was such a good fucking series.
It was so good.
Literally, oh my God. I actually opened my notes from that series today because right now we're researching Dark Hollywood. So, like, I was already like, fuck, I have a lot. Like, Jesus Christ. And I was like, I wonder how many OJ was, because I knew it was a lot. It was like almost 60 fucking pages.
Yeah, because yours, like, is,
I wrote a novella.
Yours is continuous. Seriously, yours is like, she does her notes continuous. So if, like, we do, like, a multi-parter, even if she has, like, different parts, like, in different episodes, she does it in one, like, one document.
I just do headers. Yeah.
And me, I'm like, this is one document for one episode. So if you go in mine, mine are probably, though, like, 16 pages each for every episode we did.
Yeah,
if not more. And I bought so many OJ books. which I will plug, buy the If I Had Done It off of Amazon.
If I Did It.
Or If I Did It off of Amazon, because proceeds go to the Goldman family.
Yes.
I tell everyone this, but also was very excited that OJ had died. And I know that that's a terrible thing for someone to think that someone has died, but it's OJ Simpson. And I feel a little lighter knowing that he can't hurt another person anymore, mm-hmm. whether it is emotionally or physically, because, you know, there was a lot of emotional abuse in that shit too. Mm-hmm. But you should definitely go to our YouTube and watch our OJ. I don't know if there's not actual like video, right?
So it's a video, but it's got like a thumbnail on it the whole time.
Oh, I meant I didn't know if we had recorded any video like of us doing it.
Oh, no, because this was last fall.
Yeah.
So we had, or like end of summer, beginning of fall when we recorded it. So it's just audio. There wasn't video with those ones. Oh my God, that would have been so much editing.
That would have been.
The episode I uploaded this past Friday was like almost an hour and a half. So edited.
We did so much. Definitely check out that series, but definitely check out our YouTube, because most Monday episodes will be, I would say, with the exception of like a couple here and there,
video.
Will be video. Mm-hmm. Definitely listen to our OJ episodes.
Yeah. We're hoping by the end of the year we can apply for YouTube partners so we can monetize over there. So,
very true.
If you want to help us out, you can help us out for free. Mm-hmm. Just click the button. Just click the button and let the videos play.
I do that when I have to like upload stuff onto my computer, like the audio's here. I will go and I will like look up a YouTuber that I'm like, you know, a fan of, and I'll just mute my computer and play their video. I'll watch their video later, but it also like gives them more views.
Exactly.
Especially like sometimes if we have like a big ass audio. Mm-hmm. Well, I should say my old computer used to take hours. Remember, it used to take hours to upload.
Yeah.
I would just set someone up on YouTube, like a channel, and it would just like play through. And so like I might get like three episodes out of someone. So just know that I help people out by doing my own podcasting work.
All right. Well, I've derailed us enough. What case are we talking about today?
It's okay. So we are on season one, episode 6. It's called Chance Encounter. And of course, it takes place in Colorado Springs. If you're new to the whole Papa Joe, Papa Joe is a retired detective with like over 400 cases solved. He operated out of Colorado Springs in the 80s and 90s. And he was such a good detective, they've given him multiple shows. So with that, this is season one, episode 6. I was going through them chronologically, and then we started doing like, I think it was OJ,
actually. That's funny.
Yeah.
So now it's back. Yay.
Now it's back. Joe Ketta is fantastic. Mm-hmm. He has a fan group on Facebook, bringing back to Facebook, mm-hmm. and his wife is in it.
I love that.
So when they like do adventures and travel, she'll like upload pictures of them.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
I'll share it.
I love this. Yay.
So we're going back to the 1980s, specifically 1988. Early morning on January 26, 1988 in Colorado Springs, a fire was like going off in an apartment. Not the detector, but like people could see a fire. An upstairs neighbor called 911. The fire department and the police department got there really quickly. They go inside and they find that the smoke detector has been disabled. It's like on the floor, smashed, disabled. And there's like a pile of clothes in the middle of the living room that's like smoldering. So they're like, okay, somebody set this fire on purpose.
Yeah.
Why did they? And then they start looking throughout the apartment and they open the door and they see a man laying on the floor. So of course they run to him to see what was going on, but he actually had passed away. At first they were like, oh my God, did he die of like smoke inhalation? Like did someone set a fire and that's how he died? No, he died because he was stabbed several times.
Oh shit.
In the chest. So when they looked at it in the autopsy, they realized that he actually had died before the smoke. So the fire, they could only conclude, was set to conceal his murder, because no one just has big chest wounds.
For no reason. Yeah.
No reason. The victim would be 31-year-old Victor Woods, and he was kind of known in the area. He was like a bike mechanic, but he was like a really good bike mechanic. People kind of knew who he was. So they're going through the apartment and they see, and they realize that this is kind of like a spur of the moment type thing. Like it didn't really look like it was well thought out, but when Papa Joe arrives and takes over, he concludes that this is a very violent attack, and that with the smoke alarm being disabled, this person who set this fire could have killed upwards of 220 people. And that included like women and children who lived in this apartment complex, because the smoke detector normally would go off and alert people that there's a fire. I mean, in the 80s, most, and in Colorado, with lumber being so available, most likely it was built mostly out of wood. We all know what happens when you light wood on fire.
Mm-hmm.
It goes up. So this could have really gotten out of control really quickly. And that's what the fire department kind of had said. So Papa Joe realizes at this point, this killer doesn't care who he kills. But with the numerous amount of stab wounds, they start looking for a weapon. And in the kitchen, they find a large bladed knife. When Joe got on the scene, he started like counting the blood streaks on the ceiling. Because according to Papa Joe, if you count the number of blood streaks on the ceiling and add one, you can closely estimate the number of stab wounds. And I was like, oh, damn.
Crazy.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Specific. Victor had been stabbed between 8 and 10 times with that large bladed kitchen knife. And when they realized that the knife belonged in the block in the kitchen, they're like, okay, this was more about a weapon of opportunity. It wasn't necessarily like he brought the knife with him, but it was something the killer just saw and took advantage of. They also noted that the suspect might be injured. The type of knife had like a smooth blade and handle. And knives actually aren't meant for stabbing. They're kind of meant for cutting.
Right.
So when you have something that's designed to cut, you can have more control. But like stabbing, there's so much pressure. Your hand slides down the handle. And they think that the suspect had cut his hand because there was a pair of socks in the sink that were like soaked in blood.
Oh.
And those match the same socks that were like in the victim's dresser. So they're like, okay, these are just socks from here. So they're thinking the suspect stabbed his hand, was like, shit, I'm cut, like, or cut his hand when he was stabbing, grabs the nearest thing he can think to like soak up the blood, but then leaves them in the fucking sink. Not thinking ahead.
Mm-mm.
They also noted that there was no forced entry. So the victim had to at least bring the suspect in. They also noted that this seemed overkill because literally Victor had died within like the first couple of stabs. So they were like, this is overkill. But what was the overkill reasoning? Was it passion or rage? Because according to Papa Joe, those are the reasons for overkill.
Mm-hmm.
So they do what they do and they start interviewing people. And they interviewed the 911 caller first. She was a 25-year-old pharmacist who lived in the unit above. She says about 2:15 a.m. she woke up because she heard a loud screaming that she thought was a woman's. And she heard them say, don't do that. She hears what she thinks is a fight and then or a struggle, but then nothing.
Mm.
So basically, she hears the murder happen. She gets up like a little bit later and looks out the window, or she gets up to look out the window and she sees what she thinks is a black Trans Am with blue pinstripes. So they're like, oh, they have an identity of a car, because she's like, that car is never there. And muscle cars of like the 80s really stood out because they were like big and loud. So then they like start looking around the complex and they find another witness who was a young athlete. She was actually in Colorado Springs at the training facility there, and she'd hurt her back, so she couldn't sleep much. So she'd gotten up in the middle of the night to go get like a soda. It was between 2 or 3 in the morning, she said. She goes to the vending machine to get a soda and she sees a car leaving at like a high speed. She doesn't really know what kind of car it is, but it was really loud. About this time, she looks up and sees the smoke. I don't know if she also called 911 and if the other person was just like faster, but she's not noted as the 911 caller, but she saw the smoke. So now Papa Joe says, like, the next thing I need to do is establish a timeline of like, when was the last time anyone saw this man alive? So they go to his work because they're like, did he work that day? They found out he was working. He asked all of the coworkers, they're like, would you say like Victor's an easy guy to get along with? Those type of questions. And they're like, actually, he got along with everyone except for one person. And it's this one coworker, and we'll talk about him later. But they've said to have run-ins with one another where they would like, where like the coworker would call, they would call each other names and like yell and basically like scream back and forth at one another. Mind you, he worked in a bike shop, and Victor had actually moved to Colorado from Ohio. And someone actually said that Colorado was like made for him because he loved the outdoors. And obviously he was into biking because he was into bike repair. So he just kind of like fit in. And you know, from living in Colorado Springs, that there's lots of outdoors.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, like, that was one of my favorite places that I've lived. And I'm not even, like, outdoorsy, and I still loved it there.
So, mind you, he had moved there probably about 2 or 3 years prior, and he was working as a bike mechanic in a specialty store. And then about, I don't know, like a year or less before. He'd been there about 2 years. And this guy came in and was like, oh my God, you're like the best bike mechanic ever. Come work at my store. And like poached him and did. And so I don't think he was living in Colorado Springs at that time, but he moved to Colorado Springs about this time. Friends and family were really shocked to find out that someone would kill him because they were like, nobody had issues with him. He was very easygoing. They basically painted him as a normal, fun, easygoing type of guy. He also had no history of like risky behavior. Like he wasn't known to like go do something outrageous. So they were like, I don't know where he would run in with like bad people that might want to stab him. But now the show goes back to the coworker and they talk about the fact that they would often get into heated arguments. The police bring in the coworker and they're like, dude, why the fuck are you fighting with him? And, you know, he kind of was like, well, you know, I just don't like him. And they're like, no. You don't have an argument all the time because you just don't like a person. And basically this coworker, who they don't ever name, just so that everyone knows, they basically said that before Victor came, this coworker was like the top dog in the shop. He was like the best bike mechanic, and that Victor was so good at what he did that he felt so insecure. So he was constantly trying to like pick fights with Victor to make Victor look like a bad person.
Oh my God.
You know, because he was insecure and he basically thought he might lose his job. But buddy, I want to say this to you. Like, I know this is so many years later. You're a super full-fledged adult at this point because I was only two. But think about it. Like, you could have both been the best bike people together.
Exactly.
And then your shop would get all of the work and then you'd get more money.
Literally, yeah.
They were like, okay, well, we're going to give this guy a polygraph test. And when they asked him if he had any involvement in Victor's death, the coworker was like, absolutely not. But the polygraph told a different story. But unfortunately, so I don't know if like the guy just maybe felt guilty because they like had a heated argument or not, but this dude had a legit alibi. So he belonged to like one of those pool playing groups. Like they were like an enthusiastic group and they had been out all night playing pool. So at the time of like the murder, they were literally at a restaurant having dinner. Mm. And there was like 10 or 15 people with him. So it wasn't just like a person. He had a lot of alibis. So note this for Thursday's episode, you have to have other people to have an alibi.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they were like, okay. So they asked the remainder of his coworkers, like, what does Victor do like after work? And they're like, oh, he goes to this place called the Yukon Tavern. It's apparently at the time, I don't know if it's still there because it was the 80s and who knows. It was the most popular place in the area for like 30 somethings to go. It was like a 30 something bar. And it was about a mile and a half from where Victor lived. So it's kind of convenient. It's like the place he goes. So they were like, he had mentioned something about going to happy hour there. So Papa Joe goes to the bar and starts interviewing people. And they find out that everyone knows Victor. He is a regular there. And he actually was there the night that he was murdered. So they're like, okay, timeline is moving up. We know where he worked. Like he got off at like 6, then he went to the bar and that's where he was. People would describe him as such a nice guy, except for when he'd get drunk, he might become a little obnoxious. So apparently that particular night he got super shit-faced and did not want to go home. So the bartenders cut him off. They were like, we're not giving you any more alcohol. And he kept trying to get like people to get him drinks. He kept trying to like beg them to give him drinks. And it was getting close to closing time. So they were like, dude, Victor, you have to fucking go home. Well, this was the 80s, so it's not like he could just order up an Uber and go home. He'd either have to probably, like, at this point, find a ride or walk the 1.5 miles to his house. One of the waitresses there said that she saw him talking to this other guy who was, like, white and 30-something. Apparently, he was really cute. He was, like, a movie star, and he was in, like, I'm mocking this because when I saw his photo, I was like, I don't agree. That he was really cute and he was super in shape and he had a tan and they basically were like, he was like Mr. X or Mr. Hollywood. Like he was really, like he could have been a movie star is what they said he was. And that the two of them left together at 1:30, that they had been talking for a while and then they left. And apparently he had a muscle car that when it started was very loud, or as they say on the show, it had a loud throat. And I was like, that's a weird thing to say. I didn't realize that's how we referred to cars. But no one saw the car at the bar. They only heard it. So now you have someone who looked out into the dark and saw a sports car. Didn't get any like license plate information. Couldn't see that. And only knew that it was like blue or black or black and blue. There wasn't a lot of information. You also have the other witness at the apartment complex who saw the muscle car speed away, but didn't really get any specifics. of the car, but did say that it was loud. And now at the bar, they're like, he left in a loud car. So they're like, okay, this is the same car, but we have no clue what it looks like. We have no real defined features and we have no license plate. So I don't know what the fuck to do.
Right.
Right. Like, so they're like, you know what? People who have cars like this, it was like a big thing. Like you belong to like a car club. So they're like, oh, maybe we can find him. And they keep like trying to push out and find, they go to car clubs, auto shops, other like car enthusiast groups. Nobody knows anything about this car in Colorado Springs. So they're like, okay, we need to look outside of Colorado Springs. Cause what if it's someone who like was passing through or lives in a neighboring area? So they looked and they entered it into VICAP, but VICAP showed up nothing. There was no kind of like person with this kind of car who had committed a crime. So they go back to the people at the bar and they're like interviewing them again. And basically the waitress was like a little huffed because the dude was like she hit on him, like openly hit on him. And he showed no signs of like interest in her. Mm-hmm. So she was miffed about it. So when Joe is being talked about it, he even says like she was cute and she hit on him and he didn't even like look at her or speak to her.
Wow.
So then they're going with the whole, maybe he's gay and that's why he didn't give her the time of day, and maybe Victor being so friendly gave off the wrong impression. And then they get back to, you know, that whole like they get back to the house, something happens, maybe Victor pushes him, maybe calls him a name, and the dude snaps.
Yeah.
So they were like, they looked into Victor's past and they asked family and friends, like, could he have any kind of connection to the community? And they were like, no, he's never shown any signs. Victor, at least, showed no signs of being gay or entertaining that kind of a lifestyle. They were like, literally, we have nothing. Absolutely fucking nothing. A break is about to come to Papa Joe, but it's going to become in a weird ass way. 8 days after Victor's murder, so we're like into February of 1988, in Pueblo, Colorado, there was a suspect with a Camaro armed with a 38 caliber pistol, walked into a motel lobby and robbed it and threatened, basically held the clerk at gunpoint, and a security guard came in and the guy says to him, to the security guard, I know you're armed. Give me your gun. And then he gets the security guard's gun and then shoots the security guard in the face.
Holy shit.
The security guard lives.
Oh, good.
But then he takes the gun and he goes over to the clerk, who's a 26-year-old male who's behind the counter, and kills him and takes the money and bolts. And I can't think that there's a lot of money in a motel cash register.
No. Mm-mm.
So the story of the timeline that we know is from the security guard, because he lives and he also hears a loud car, but it's a Camaro. Mind you, in Colorado Springs, they think it's a Trans Am, which are similar. Come to find out, that exact hotel had been robbed several weeks earlier.
Damn.
A white guy walked in with a gun, robbed it, then was like telling people that he had done it and that he was going to do it again. And then when the shooting happened of the clerk, the murder of the clerk, these people came forward and were like, this dude, his name was Robert Lee White. And he had a very extensive, long criminal history. And come to find out, he lived in Colorado Springs. Because like Pueblo and Colorado Springs are like 50 miles apart. It doesn't take you that. They were like saying something like it takes like 45 to 50 minutes to get there. So basically, the Pueblo Police Department contact Colorado Springs. And they're like, hey, we have this dude. He lives in Colorado Springs, but he's wanted for a murder here in Pueblo. Can you help us? So they literally jump him at his apartment, like get him, capture him, and then they take him in and then they take him to Pueblo. But then they put out an arrest notification and Papa Joe gets it. And he's looking at it. And so he takes the arrest notification and goes and shows people, hey, is this the guy? And he gets a, that kind of looks like him. Not like, oh, that's him, but it kind of looks like him. So they're like, okay, I can't really put them on the stand because they're going to say it looks like him. So I need harder evidence. Joe has an idea. Papa Joe is like, what we're going to do is we're going to like have him to come back to Colorado Springs because he's in Pueblo. And that 45 minute drive, he's going to sit there and stew and be like, what the fuck am I going back here for? Why are they taking me back to Colorado Springs? Because mind you, his only crimes he's connected with at this point are in Pueblo. So he comes back, and when Papa Joe walks in the room, Robert is sleeping. His head is in his arms and he's sleeping on the table. And they say a guilty person can sleep, especially ones that don't care. So they're sitting there and he's just like blank staring ahead. They were like, he had soulless eyes. he would occasionally like look off to the side where there was like a no smoking sign. Because, you know, about the time that they cracked down on smoking in buildings. And Papa Joe goes, oh, do you want a cigarette? He goes, but the sign. Which is like, dude, you just murdered people. Like, do you really care about the sign that says no smoking? Papa Joe is like, well, I run this place. So if you want a cigarette, I can give you a cigarette. But he did this strategically because he wanted to see if he could see any cuts in Robert's hand. So he gives him the cigarette. He hands him the lighter so that he can actually like hold his hand out and see things like that. And he sees what could be a little bit of a cut on his hand. But mind you, he has nothing. Papa Joe has circumstantial, very, very weak circumstantial evidence. It's like, this guy kind of looks like that, and he has a car that kind of looks like that. That's not a definitive. So basically, because we know that police can lie to us, Papa Joe invoked this tactic, but in a way that's like not 100% lying. But basically, he says, look, you know, people see you. You might not see them, but they see you. And he brings up the waitress at the bar and the bartender and, you know, people who regulars at the bar. He like brings all this up and he's like, they saw you. They saw you leave with him. The women in the apartment complex saw you leave with him. So at this point, Robert is kind of just like looking at them like he's not fazed, but he goes, so when Papa Joe goes, what? He invited you over for like some more drinks. And Robert immediately picks up the train of thought that he says and he goes, oh, dude, no, he came on to me. And they were like, nope, we know that that's not his preference. So that didn't happen. And they were like, well, what did he say something to piss you off? And he basically doesn't say why. He goes, yeah, I killed him. And I set the fire and I killed the clerk. So Joe goes, have you killed anyone that we don't know about? And he says, no, but then smirks at Joe.
Ew.
Right. So they take him back to Pueblo. And they take him back and they like, he stands trial and basically he gets trial for the clerk he kills. He pleads guilty for that one, let's say. And he pleads guilty for Victor's case. And he gets life without parole because of the fact that he pled guilty. But when he was at court, he may or may not have told the judge he is involved with at least 15 murders.
What?
So we know of one other murder besides the clerk and Victor. Apparently, 3 years before he killed Victor, Robert is apparently a Trekkie. He loves himself some Star Trek. And he had like settled in to watch the new episode. And his roommate came in and was like, oh, dude, I want to watch the show. And like goes to turn the channel. And Robert shot him and then watched his show.
Oh my God. What a psycho.
Yeah. So needless to say, Robert is a terrible person and he's still serving life in prison.
Good.
In Colorado. But oh my God, I was like, this has more twists and turns in it than I expected this story to.
For real.
But yeah, this was a case that had so many twists and turns and I was just like, holy shit, did not expect that.
Right?
I miss doing Papa Joe stories because you know how much we love him.
Yes. Bring him back. Bring him back.
I will.
Yay.
With that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up today's episode. We hope you enjoy this and we will be back with more Papa Joe episodes. But we'll be back on Thursday, as Tara mentioned earlier, because she spilled the beans. It's okay. We're doing headlines and yeah.
Good ones.
It's going to be a good one. And we will see you then. Toodles.
Bye.